Thank you, Rory, pour cet aperçu très large du travail du consortium, dont vous voyez que c'est approfondi, lourd, très certainement, et demande donc des efforts suivis de l'ensemble des équipes nombreuses dans les différents pays qui interviennent. Et donc, sur le module de cette année, dont Rory vous a fait à l'instant une description articulée avec le reste, j'ai le plaisir de demander à Terje Andreas Ekemo de venir présenter le travail de l'équipe qui a conçu ce module Inégalité sociale de santé. Terje est professeur de sociologie à la Norwegian University of Science and Technology. Terje, if you want, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for inviting me to this event. My name is Terje Andreas Ekemo, and I'm a professor of sociology at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology in Trondheim, which is based in Norway. I would like to mention a few things about what I do, which I think is relevant to the theme of today. I am a member of the Norwegian expert group of the social inequalities in health, which is set up by the Norwegian Directorate for Health. And we give advice to the Norwegian government in such matters. I'm also the editor-in-chief of the Scandinavian Journal of Public Health, which is, according to many, maybe the leading public health journal in the Nordic countries. And I've already seen the first submissions using the new health module to the journal, so I think that's a good sign. I'm also the director of CHAIN, and CHAIN is, we hope, about to become a world leading center for the international study of health inequalities. And together with UNICEF as the main partner, UNICEF New York, UNICEF Innocenti, and UNICEF Norway, and many other partners such as Doctors Without Borders and the Red Cross, the center seeks to identify specific policy interventions that are effective in reducing health inequalities in different global regions, including Europe, of course. And CHAIN is chaired by Sir Michael Marmot, who many of you might be aware of. Now, I'm here as the head of the health module, and I feel privileged to be here to present to you the first results. And since 2002, we have been working quite intensively with the module, with my international team, and not at least with Dr. Rory Fitzgerald and his team at City University in London. Indeed, there have been some intensive days in London the last few years. It has been a real pleasure to work with you all, and I hope for more collaborations in the future. Many publications using the health module, and perhaps even more modules in the future. Finally, I should mention that I'm here also on behalf of my team, and all the authors and their affiliations are mentioned in the top-line reports, which I think will be handed. And most members of the team are from the High News Project, which is funded by the NORFACE program. And the High News Project Group has also prepared the results of this booklet and further 17 articles that will be published in the European Journal of Public Health early next year, maybe as soon as December. But we think in January should be ready. And the data became available to us only in May, so I think this is well done. So I want to start this presentation by some background information. I want to start by addressing what health inequality is, or what we understand what health inequality is. It usually refers to the differences in health which exist between social classes, areas, or groups, for example, by age, by gender, by race, or place. as they are socially produced, they are potentially avoidable and widely considered unacceptable in a civilized society. In most European research and policy discourse, the term health inequality is used to refer to differences by socioeconomic status, measured in terms of income, occupation, or education, which will be the theme of this presentation. Importantly, inequalities in health between socioeconomic groups are not restricted to differences between the most privileged groups and the most disadvantaged groups. Health inequalities exist across the whole social gradient, as is illustrated in this picture. So the social gradient in health is not confined to the poorest in society. It runs from the bottom to the top. And even the comfortably off people, somewhere in the middle, tend to have poorer health than those above them. Social inequalities in health are universal within European countries, and they extend along the whole social ladder. The higher the social position, the better the health. Of course, the policy implications that you can take from this is that it makes little sense only to focus on the poorest. We need to make policies that affect all people. After all, most people are placed somewhere in the middle. And this is also where most of the unfulfilled health potential is. Now, why do we have a graded relationship between status and health? Well, this is because health depends on social determinants, which in turn affects how we behave. In the WHO Commission on Social Determinants of Health, led by Sir Michael Marmot, the social determinants of health are defined as the circumstances in which people grow, live, work, and age, and the systems put in place to deal with illness. In other words, our health will depend on a range of circumstances and conditions throughout our lives, including childhood conditions, education, working conditions, neighborhood conditions, economic resources, and housing conditions, as illustrated in this figure. Now, in making the module, we made sure to study these determinants thoroughly, of course. Now, my next question is, how evident is the social gradient in health across Europe? Now, despite remarkable declines in morbidity and mortality rates in Europe over the last few decades, socioeconomic inequalities in health persist. These results are taken from the EuroGBD project, which I led and was coordinated by Johan Mackenbach, and it shows the age standardized mortality rates by education among men in the period from 2000 till 2005. Here you can see France, and those with the highest number are those the lower educated, mid educated, and then the higher educated. As you can see, in the whole of Europe, the higher educated live longest. The mid educated are always in the middle as a gradient, and the lower, they tend to die earlier. And, of course, there are two important informations here. The first is that there is always the graded relationship in the expected direction in all countries. Actually, we find this in all countries that we have studied with available data. The other observation is, of course, that there is a lot of variation between countries in the magnitude of inequalities. And this calls, of course, for explanations. So why is it that in some countries the inequalities are larger than in others? Now, with this data, which is based on mortality, it is impossible to say why this is. We can speculate, of course, based on other sources, but we cannot combine mortality data across Europe with social determinants, being, for example, childhood conditions or housing conditions or We have education and mortality and cause of death, gender and country. And this is typical. This is the old information we get. So because of lack of data which combines health outcomes with determinants, we don't know their real contributions relative to each other. Now, indeed, an extensive body of knowledge has examined these different pathways and the relation between status and health in different countries, and few other regions have made social inequalities in health a more debated and researched topic than Europe. However, with few exceptions, most of this research has focused on single pathways, examined only single countries, focused on mortality only, because of the limited availability of health measures and social determinants. I think you know where this is going. So why ESS and why now? Now, the health module of the seventh round of the ESS provides a unique opportunity. That's not an overstatement. To overcome such limitations and comparatively investigate the contribution of multiple factors in explaining social inequalities in health across Europe. The module greatly enhances our abilities to conduct cross-national sociological and social science research into health and health inequalities. The new module means that for the first time, such a pan-European data set is available to take this sociological approach to social inequalities in health. And further, with the new module, we will be able to fully examine the role of institutional structures, that is, welfare states, on chronic diseases. Welfare states shape the social structure. They shape the living conditions and lifestyles of European populations. And therefore, an examination of health behaviors, which is typically found in health service, in populations must be accompanied with an examination that is able to unveil the deeper social context of individuals belonging to different welfare states, which is found in sociological service. So what we tried to do was actually bringing sociology into epidemiology, but actually by bringing the medical field into sociology, if you can see the irony of that. And the European Social Survey is ideal for this perspective because political variables, psychosocial, social, material variables, they already exist in the core module, right? So by including lifestyle behaviors, childhood conditions, housing conditions, working conditions, and variables describing healthcare access, and together with mental and physical health outcomes, of course, the ESS has strengthened its position tremendously as a data source for researchers wanting to perform European cross-national analysis of health inequalities. And furthermore, most research comparing social inequalities in health across welfare states, they have not included the Central and Eastern European countries or failed to acknowledge differences within this group. And in this respect, I would also like to mention that the ESS has been replicated around at the same time with almost the same questions in the South African Social Attitude Survey, the SASAS, and also in the United States. We were also able to replicate some of the questions in the General Social Survey. So we are now facing opportunities to do cross-continental research of social inequalities in health and their determinants with the ESS, with the SASAS, and with the GSS. I'm not going to go through all this. These are all the variables. These are all the questions that the module consists of. I just want to inform you briefly about the selection process before I finally will go on to the results. Now, when we try to add the factors, we relied on the Dahlgren and Whitehead model that I already showed to you. We relied on recent reviews on the social determinants of health, such as the Marmot review. We reviewed the existing evidence on their cross-national prevalence. Of course, we cannot add variables that ask questions that no one really answers, such as diabetes type 1. That would not be suitable for this purpose. We also analyzed their level of social inequality and their associations with physical and mental health. And we gave priority to potential important health determinants identified in national reviews, such as housing conditions and use of alternative health services and unpaid care. And these are variables that we really rarely see in surveys, if at all. And then following the two-nation pilot, we assessed the social determinants items that were not part of the ESS core for their prevalence, social gradient, and their association with health outcomes. We also gave priority to questions that could be measured using a limited list of items. We only had 30 items, so we could not take into account everything. Now, there are many tables in the booklet. I was hoping that you might have them now so you could look at some of the tables, but I cannot show all of them here because there is simply too much information. In the booklet, you will see that we have highlighted some of the results, but even that would be too much information. So I will actually highlight only some of the highlights. And before I do that, I should mention that for each outcome and determinant within the module, we calculated H standardized prevalence rates. This means that when you look at each country, you can not really say that this is the prevalence in that country, because they are calculated in order to make them comparable between countries. So they are comparable, and that's also the aim of this presentation. We weighted the age groups in accordance with the European standard population in 2013, and we grouped the variable by region, and we added some colors, as you might see there. My intention is not for you to read this, it's just an illustration of how the tables look like, where the red boxes are the higher prevalent conditions and the green ones are the less prevalent conditions. So in one of the tables, we present self-reported conditions. What we see is that all conditions affect substantial percentages of the sample in most countries. So, for example, the percentage of people reporting heart problems and circulation problems is lower in Northern Europe and higher in the Central East. The prevalence of breathing problems is particularly low in Central and Eastern Europe, and allergies appear to be very problematic in Northern Europe, where I'm from. The same applies to stomach problems. Skin problems are particularly high in Finland and very low in Central and Eastern Europe. What we also could mention is that severe headaches have a strong gender gap, and percentages in Germany, France, and Portugal reporting these conditions are more than three times higher than what we find in Ireland. Now, if we combine all these conditions, we see that in nearly all countries, more than half of the sample reports either one or even two or more conditions for the last 12 months. For women in Finland, in France, and Germany, this is close to 90%, meaning that only a small minority did not experience any of these conditions. Now, what about depressive symptoms? Well, again, we find the gender gap, which is in line with previous studies using the ESS. We find low prevalences in Finland, Norway, and Switzerland, and higher in the southern and central and eastern Europe, which we have also seen before. With regard to overweight and obesity, we find that men are more likely to be overweight than women in our sample. And the percentage with overweight or obesity is very high in Central and Eastern Europe. I would also like to mention a few results about healthcare access. There is a lot of variation in unmet needs. So if you had a need for healthcare in the last 12 months that was not met, here we see that the prevalences are very high in Finland, in France, and Germany. And if we look at the reasons for unmet need, we see that waiting lists is an important reason, and particularly in Estonia, in Poland, and Israel. And interestingly, in several countries, we see that the use of alternative treatment is more normal than using a specialist. Now, over to risk behavior. I would like to mention just a bit on smoking and a bit on alcohol consumption. Now, starting with the data on smoking, percentages of current smokers are much lower in Northern Europe and considerably higher among men in Central and Eastern Europe, as we might expect, where we also see a gender gap in smoking behavior. Now, alcohol. There is a strong variation across countries in the percentage reporting frequent alcohol consumption, with very low percentages in Israel and Central and Eastern Europe, especially among women. Looking at the quantity of alcohol, we see that overall men consume almost twice as many units as women, and the number of units consumed is very high in Ireland. Frequent binge drinking is very high in the UK and Portugal, and frequent binge drinking is rare in Northern Europe and among women in Central and Eastern Europe. Now, of course, I could continue. I could tell you where they smoke the most, where they drink the most, where there are most problems with unmet need and so on. But actually, to use the true potential of the module, we have to combine all this information, right? So I think what I have now listed are results that you can read in national reports about how much people drink or smoke in your countries. That's not the main aim of the module. The main aim is, of course, to find out what is the contribution of all these determinants on health and health inequality. Now, I want to start doing this by looking at self-rated health. Now, we ask people, what is your health in general, on a scale from 1 to 5, where 1 is very poor and 5 is very good. This is actually a question which is part of the core module. And many publications have come out of this one variable, which is extremely powerful. It actually appears that if you ask people about their own health, it has a strong relationship with mortality. If you ask about whether a person has diabetes or ever had a heart attack, and if you ask them how their health is in general, actually, the last question is the most powerful predictor of mortality. People know very well how their health is. And this reporting is also relatively equal between social groups. So people in different groups know how their health is. So in the final section of the booklet that you will read eventually, we focus on three main groups of mechanisms explaining educational inequalities in health across Europe. Before I do that, just let me briefly tell you a bit about this figure that you will see later. The reason you see both red and blue dots is that because some years ago, it became evident that we cannot look at inequalities in one way. There are relative inequalities and there are absolute inequalities. The absolute distance of reporting poor health between the higher group and the lower group has a different meaning than their relative difference. But what we see is that where the relative inequalities are large, the absolute inequalities appear almost in the same pattern. So, but in the continuation, I will base the results on the relative contribution. So the graph can be read from two sides. Here the absolute and here the relative. You see here as expected that the largest inequalities are found in the east. Here are the smaller inequalities, Netherlands, Israel, Finland, Spain, Poland. And here again, Ireland, Switzerland, and Denmark. It is not So the reason why we chose to put the countries in this order is that we started with the countries where health was reported the best, so where the largest proportion reported good health. Because we think that the countries closest to each other are the most comparable because of this. So this is just a note for you. Now, there are many ways in which we can calculate the contribution of different factors. The way I'm going to show you now is a summary measure, let's say that. So we have gone into much more detail looking at different types in various articles that we will publish, but for now I wanted to demonstrate the potential of the module by grouping the variables into behavior, into occupation, and into living conditions. So now, for the first time, I'd say, we can really look comparatively in Europe, and we can guide European governments, telling them whether it is the living conditions that are driving inequalities, whether it's the occupation, or whether it is actually the behavior. And I have to admit that the research so far has been very dominant to the behavior. Usually, we explain health inequalities by poor behavior. Is it so? Well, I could never really argue one way or the other because the studies have not combined all this information. So this is a summary analysis, as I said. And here, these are really small letters. You can read them more carefully later. But here are some of the main results. So we found that adjusting for these three sets of factors on differences in self-rated health, it reduced the observed inequalities in self-rated health between educational groups quite substantially, but in different ways in different countries. This suggests that these types of health determinants continue to be major contributors to health inequalities. Now, what can we see here? The blue bars shows how much inequality is reduced if, let's say, the behavior would be better. The red bars accounts for the occupational factors, while the gray bars accounts for the living conditions. So, for example, in the Czech Republic, which is the first country here, 35% of the inequalities are because of poor behavior, while almost 70% is because of occupation, and living conditions accounts for almost 40%. As you can see, this amounts to more than 100%, but this is this still shows the independent effects, but there is an overlap. Obviously, within them. So let's look at France. Is here. And this shows that behavioral factors is actually the least significant element to explain inequalities in health. In France, you should focus on living conditions and on occupation, and then on behavior. Well, actually, occupational factors were found to explain the largest share of educational inequalities in 8 out of 21 countries. Behavior determinants were found to be the largest contributor to educational inequalities in Ireland, in the UK, Norway, Sweden, and Spain, while living conditions emerge as the leading contributing for educational inequalities in health in 8 of the countries. We have also, of course, identified which of the living condition factors are important within this group and which of the occupational factors are most important for each country and which of the behavior factors are most important. But for this purpose, a more general overview like this is more useful. So I would now like to start to summarize what we have seen and make some conclusions. We have actually barely scratched the surface of the opportunities that lie within this new module. Still, these initial analyses have already demonstrated the complex nature of health inequalities and revealed findings that may appear surprising to some. For example, the results suggest that it may not be feasible to reduce health or improve health and their social patterning by increasing tobacco prices or promoting physical activity alone. We need to address the deeper social structure, the living conditions, the occupational factors. So, for example, income redistribution policies or actions towards the improvement of physical working conditions in manual occupations are probably just as effective policies, depending, of course, on the country, based on these graphs that you have just seen. And this is because health and health inequalities are deeply rooted in the social stratification systems of modern societies. And we should note that we also found considerably shared effects across countries for different combinations of factors. So, for example, behavior and living conditions, or living conditions and occupational factors. And this points to the interdependent nature of these factors, which in turn suggests that tackling health inequalities should be a concentrated effort that goes beyond interventions on single factors. Now, the persistence of social inequalities in health and in European welfare states, and what that means for how we understand them and reduce them, has to date not been comprehensively examined empirically. There is an urgent need to expand our knowledge with comparable data on health determinants and more refined health outcomes for a larger set of European countries. Of course, there are limitations to the data that we have used in terms of coverage and methodological challenges, but we think that the new Pan-European Sociological Health Module has already provided us with an exciting opportunity to that was not available before. So if I'm about to give an advice based on these results, it would mean that, well, as I said, banning smoking or performing policies to improve physical activity, make people eat more fruit and vegetable, for example, all this can be very effective in the short run. But these are symptoms. It's maybe the easy way out that can make you re-elected. But the real problems, they lie deeper. Now, I think that the brave policies would be those that can really make a change for a longer period of time. But it would not happen immediately, and it might not get you re-elected. So it will take time, but it will probably make a change. But as we have seen, behavior and the easy way out is also an important way to go. I'm not saying that. But I think what this module has the potential of doing is to tell policymakers, to tell researchers, to tell people that we behave for a reason. Yeah, so it is the deeper social structure which is in turn related to behavior from a societal point of view. I'm not talking about individuals, I'm talking about the society. So making a true change would be to address the whole social gradient, not only focus on the poorest or the richest, but everyone in between, and perform policies that are universal, that affects the whole social gradient, that can really lift it up. And I think that addressing living conditions and income redistribution policies, for example, this will do this and help improve the health among most of the people who are approximately here in the middle. And I think this was one of the aims of the module, to really tell, or hopefully, if the results would come that way, and it apparently does. So I think this is a strong message that we can already get out of the module. Even if we are still coming up with new results, I would like to mention the publication we already have in the really well-renowned European Sociological Review, where we have presented the module, evaluated the limitations, and presented the questions. Two members of the team, Claire Bamber and Tim Houts, and also Rory, is here. And I would also like to mention that in a few weeks from now, we will publish 16 articles, actually 17 with the introduction, where we go more deeply into each of the mechanisms, into healthcare, into childhood, into all these different determinants that we have were so lucky to get into the ESS. With that, I think I have concluded, and if there are some questions, then I'm happy to address them now or later in the discussion. So thank you very much. Thank you.